welcome to the latest edition of the Teach Then podcast. I'm Pat Brennan, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Marianne Checkley, CEO of Kinia. Marianne, you are very welcome to the TeachNet podcast.
Thanks, Pat. Delighted to be here.
Listen, before we start talking about Kinia and its work, on a personal note, I was just thinking before we came on here, I think our paths first crossed when you were working with iSchool around 2009 or 2010, I think. From that perspective, it's great to reconnect. I suppose it has been a wee bit too long, but maybe we use that as a jumping off point. If you could maybe introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your own journey, your time in iSchool, of course, and through to your current role now as the CEO of Kinia.
Yeah, sure. And of course, it's been a few years and lives are flashing in front of our eyes, Pat, but it's all good. Going back to the iSchool days, that would have been in the very early days of that programme and when we were introducing it and setting it up in Ireland. So certainly what brought me to the iSchool journey as well was it's always my work has been grounded in a fundamental belief in the power of education and also in the fact that talent is in abundance in Ireland, in every community and in every corner of every community in Ireland. But unfortunately, due to a range of reasons, it's not always the case that that talent gets to shine and gets to grow. So really providing opportunities for young people to access education, find their gifts, find their superpowers, and really fulfill their potential and contribute positively and actively to the future of their communities. So I always kind of worked in that area and always kind of worked with project-based learning and technology. So going back to previous projects around filmmaking and, you know, building remote control cars and all the rest of it, you know, ways of kind of creatively using technology to engage young people in learning experiences. So iSchool was set up around that time. It was to use the opportunity at the time of the tools of online learning to provide access for young people who weren't in school for a range of reasons. So they're around between 12 and 16. They might have been out of school for behavioral issues, for family reasons, for illness. And online learning provided us an opportunity to do blended or online access to them for their learning journey. So we started off developing the program, piloting, testing it, and grew it. So I worked on that for about 10 years, up to 2018. It was certainly a journey. There was lots of learnings out of it. It grew, it developed, and now it's part of a statutory solution for that. So we were all very proud of everyone who was working on that project, of how it grew and the impact that it had. So after 10 years, it was time for me to certainly to try something new. There was lots of new stuff happening in the space of ed tech. And I then moved to what at the time was Camara Ireland. So people would probably be familiar with Camara Education and the work that was going on at the time in sub-Saharan Africa with laptop donations. Camara Ireland had spun out of Camara as focused on the Irish context specifically and was doing some really interesting work in schools with digital access, but also with another program called TechSpace that was working in the youth services space. So that was a project that had been going on for a couple of years at that point as well, being creative with technology. So the bringing together of both of those solutions, and then during 2019, 2020, we merged with SUIS Education. So we were working with them to provide solutions to use online learning for Reading Buddy at that time when schools were closed during COVID, MathsWiz. We were having conversations and we thought, look, there's so many initiatives going on. There's an opportunity to have bigger and better impact together and look to see how we can weave all of these pieces together and have something that can take the best of everything, grow it, scale it. Everybody was kind of grounded in that opportunity access piece and also kind of with a vision to using technology and digital skills being fundamental to that as well. So we brought those organizations together and rebranded to Kinia. So the rebrand to Kinia was rooted in when we were looking at what is the commonalities? What's the red thread across all of our work? So really what that was, collective opportunity. So really collectively creating opportunity. So for us, it was about community. It was about everybody who's invested in positive futures for young people in their communities. So that's what really kind of motivated us. So at the root of Kinia is kin. So that is really about community, about working together, about young people finding their tribe, finding their talents, opening their gifts, finding their superpowers, and really unlocking their opportunity. So yeah, that's the story. So since 2018, we're now 2026. We're a national bilingual organization. Part of that collective community is also around Irish language programs. We've been working on that since those early days of 2018 as well. So we provide everything we do at Sperla and at Scalga, and we work in schools and youth services as a capacity building organization, providing professional development to teachers and youth workers around a range of skills. And we work with now probably just about 2,500 educators each year.
No, because I noticed that I was looking more at it, because it was only recently I got the broader sense of what Kinia were doing, because I remember the days of Camara, and actually it was opposite us in the digital hub there.
That's
for a
right,
while.
Yeah.
I know you're not a million miles away now either, up in the Enterprise Centre. But no, it's interesting, and I think it does make sense, because a big thing, you hear this word a lot about initiative fatigue happening in schools and so many organisations offering so many different things. It really does make sense to broaden it out and have this umbrella that it's one organisation rather than offering all these various supports and programmes, rather than just, as I said, separate organisations offering a myriad of different things. But look, I suppose moving on, going back to the website, Kinia to me, it's very much grounded in the idea that education is the playing field leveler, or it's the key driver to equality and opportunity for young people. And developing opportunities in the community, as you're talking about, is very much about how those opportunities can be broadened. What, I suppose, are the key aims driving Kinia's work at this very moment in time? And what are the main programs or areas of work you're currently delivering across schools and youth settings?
Really, what we want to do is, I suppose, coming at it from just a slightly different start. We talk to children from a young age when they're 3 and 4, and we hear them saying, you know, they want to be rock stars, or they want to be astronauts and all the rest of it. And everybody really encourages that and celebrates that as well. But something happens in that middle space then, you know, by the time they're coming out the other side of education, a lot of those bubbles have been burst, really, in terms of their potential. So what we want to do is to make that space between those wonderful dreams that a child has at a time when they don't see the barriers to them either, and when they're coming out the other side of education. Like, what are the learning spaces in between that we need to create so that people can go through a journey and unlock those gifts as well? So there's a few pieces that are key to us. One is that we work in schools and in youth services. So that recognizes that learning doesn't just stop at the school gates, and part of a community approach. Youth services do wonderful work, and this harks back to my previous work as well, and just working in school completion programs and in that space between schools and youth services. So there's a space there where young people can be free to really experiment with the messy part of learning that's really rich and diverse as well. So they can fail, they can learn to try again, they can be really creative and not be constrained by curriculum also. So we work in formal and in non-formal spaces, so with youth services and with teachers, but we provide the same programs to both. It's around that capacity building in both areas, but it's also where you say around the initiative fatigue there too. It's not an extra program. So we want to upskill the educators, just to use that broad term, so that they can use digital skills in whatever subject area they're doing, whatever program they're doing, that they become confident to be facilitators as well. They don't need to be knowledge experts across everything, but it's about being confident to be a facilitator to support young people to be creative with technology. So I think that's a fundamental part of our approach. So working across learning and education in its broadest sense of the word, and there's a huge opportunity, I think, as well, especially when we're talking about the inclusion and equity space. Often there are reasons why there might be barriers to education for young people. Teachers and youth workers are working with the same young people in the same communities, but often they're not talking to each other. Not because they don't want to, it's just because professional time and all the rest of it. So the fact that we deliver the same programs, it's not an extra layer either. So it's not something extra that they need to do. Our approach is about building the skills in. Project-based learning is also key to our approach. So it's around building, being creative with technology, you know, coming up with significant questions, problems in communities, building solutions to them, but really about that process of learning in a creative, applied way as well, using technology. So that integrates then across all program areas. So a geography teacher can use a range of tools, could be mobile filmmaking, could be podcasting, could be microbits measuring data of water quality in a local river, whatever it is. Technology and digital skills aren't just around a specific subject area for us. They're right across a broad spectrum. We have co-creation at the center of what we do. So we have a youth advisory board. We also every year have an educator advisory board, and we consult when we're developing our programs to make sure that we're not making assumptions, and also to make sure that we're reaching the people we say we're reaching with the mission, you know, and that we're considering cultural contexts, we're considering language, and that brings a real richness. So we're not just looking at education from a single lens. We're really looking at it as an ecosystem, as a community approach, but also from multiple lenses, from different perspectives. So that really brings a richness to our programs as well.
It seems to be so broad and expansive what you're doing. Particularly, I'm interested to hear that piece because most of our listeners will be educators. That idea, and we'll come on to it a bit when we talk more specifically about programs, about that trying to facilitate and give teachers the confidence to be able to deliver these programs without having to have been tech savvy. Or it's that sort of guide on the side is often quoted. But I suppose from that perspective, from a practical, if I could unpick, how does it look on the ground? If you are helping, say, that geography teacher you spoke about, what supports and practical things do you provide to help those teachers gain that confidence?
Well, I think the first thing is that, like, we respect that the teacher is the subject matter expert in their field, and they have experience teaching. They've gone through a qualification around it as well. And similarly for youth services and youth workers, they know their context best. So what we do is we provide them with confidence in using tech and using digital, and then with project resources and ideas and how to apply it in their context. So it's really about, for them, unlocking what they see the potential. So giving them the confidence in using the digital skills, pointing them in a direction that this is how it could be applied in your context, but also kind of giving them the space to apply their expertise and respecting that expertise as well. So once they have the confidence to play with it, to just try out different approaches as well, then it's about unlocking for them how they can use it in the classroom and use that project-based learning in the classroom as well. So our team provides ongoing support. So once an educator does training with us, then they have access to our education team. So they can do projects in the classroom, they can put them together, they can submit them then to our annual Creative Tech Fest. We also have resources around curriculum alignment and assessment rubrics, so they can pull out the learning from projects that are done. So again, that initiative fatigue piece, it's not about another initiative. It's about, okay, how does this solve a problem for you? How does this create a solution for you delivering your curriculum as well? A couple of examples are probably the easiest way to kind of bring it to life a bit. So this year we had Sinead in Mullingar. So a teacher, this is for our Creative Tech Fest this year. Sinead in Mullingar worked with a group of girls in the Loretto School there, did the AI training course with us, was working then transferring and cascading those skills with the girls in her class. They identified a problem that they didn't have when they transitioned to secondary school. They didn't have knowledge about AI. So they thought what would be really valuable would be for first years coming in, as one of the first pieces of work that they do as an entry into secondary school, would be a peer learning piece where transition years deliver an AI education program to first years in the school as well. So Sinead, as a teacher, with the training and support from Kinia, was able to support the girls in turn develop and deliver that program. And then in another context, we had one of our tech spaces of the year this year was Mick, so a young traveler lad from Wexford, and he's been doing a lot of projects in his local youth service, and his youth worker Robbie has done training with us for a few years now. So last year Mick did a mini solar farm from Kinia training. It was the green tech training, so there's kind of little wind turbines and solar panels and using a bit of tech and micro bits as well, just to build a model farm and use the concepts of what can drive renewable energy or what can drive a farm to be driven by renewable energy. So he was pipped at the post last year for Tech Spacer of the Year. I remember him saying that he was going to work really hard and come back this year and win. And he did, you know, he worked really hard on something a little bit different. So he actually did a podcast with his friends in that Traveller Boys group. He did The Good, the Bad and the Ugly of Enniscorthy. So what he wanted to achieve out of that was really, how can we improve our community? But also, how can we give voice to us as young traveller boys in showing people that we care about our community and we're thinking about it and we want to improve it as well. Lots of learning out of that. They got lots of skills badges around different areas of digital literacy, from podcasting, but also kind of green tech skills.
Yeah.
But again, human skills. So I think those stories kind of bring to life a little bit more around how our approach works from end to end.
Absolutely. I mean, Marianne, just from listening to it, it's using the practical application of technology. You spoke about the microbits. Funny, I think the last podcast I did was with Amy from the Microbit Foundation to hear how you're using them. And I've also seen it out in Dreamspace. These are practical and getting people to think about. It's not just technology out in the ether there. It's about bringing it in and about integrating it practically. And I've always felt that. I taught myself for many years in a disadvantaged area. And that's what first got me actually interested in technology, because I saw it as this leveler and this tool that can help, particularly the students I had at the time. But I suppose I want to get on specifically to one program. But before I do, I mean, for teachers who are out there listening to this and goes, wow, look at the support. How do they tap into these, Marianne, in a practical way?
Yeah, so listen, we're focusing on open access. So it's DESH schools would be top of the list for our programs, areas of socioeconomic disadvantage as well, rural isolation. We have great support from the Department of the Gaeltacht to run our programs, as Gaelge in Gaelscoileanna and Gaelcolláiste around the country as well, migrant groups, ethnic minorities. So educators working in that space are our priority and they're top of the list for our programs. We're very lucky to have a range of supporters and funders that allow us to deliver programs. We have demand, we always have waiting lists, but we are able to bring people to the top of the queue once we're able to see, okay, this is where we're going to have impact and this is where we're going to really align and unlock our mission as well as an organization. People are welcome to reach out to us. You can do that through our website. Once they contact us on our website, somebody from our education team will contact them and then just chat through what would be a good fit and also just start the journey with us as well. It's not just a one-off training as well with Kinia. Once you're in, and it's the ongoing support as well and having access to our resources on the Kinia Academy and then being able to attend that Creative Tech Fest every year as well. It's a real wraparound approach and it's not just about that one-off piece of work or training. It's becoming part of our network and also having the opportunity to share and collaborate with other educators and see what's happening in other contexts as well. And that's where there's some real rich learning too.
Yeah, no, I think that some of those things are absolutely key. That wraparound piece, you know, we often refer to the way not to do training or any professional development is that you avoid the drive-by workshop, as we used to call them. But it is that idea, there needs to be follow-up, there needs to be continuity. And that's particularly, I would imagine, for the students as well. But for teachers, it's obviously a huge comfort to know that backup and support is there throughout. You know, these are journeys that we're all on. A one-off webinar or face-to-face workshop just doesn't really cut it, you know. And I'm seeing that across a lot of the space now that people have realized it's the broader wraparound, as you're talking about, that works best. I wanted to talk to you about a core or a specific program that you're offering around AI. As we all know, AI is omnipresent. And depending on where you sit, you're either very excited about it or you're completely overwhelmed by it. It's interesting, on another podcast that I was listening to, the line was, doing nothing is not an option. And I also think about that adage, we are where we are. This is here, you know, the genie is out of the bottle. Whether we're comfortable with it or not comfortable with it, we have to actually embrace it. And we also have to try and prepare our young people for a world where it's even hard to imagine how much of it will be out there by the time they're entering workplaces and so on. So that brings me round to this. It's a program from the Raspberry Pi Foundation and Google DeepMind. It's called Experience AI. Can you tell me, just broad brushstrokes, what is Experience AI and what is it aiming to do?
Experience AI, it's a free educational program from Raspberry Pi Foundation. And as you say, was developed in partnership with Google DeepMind. So it's built solidly on research. And I think that comes from the pedigree of Raspberry Pi Foundation as a research and an IP generating organization as well. They work with universities around the development of their programs as well. So it's cross-curricular too. So the lessons are designed so that educators in a wide range of subjects can use them. So it's not just for computer science, it's for any teacher. So it sits really well in with our approach in Kinia because it's an ecosystem of lessons. And it also goes beyond tools. And that's often its starting point. So rather than just teaching people maybe how to use ChatGPT or prompts or anything like that, it gets under the hood of AI and focuses on the underlying concepts like how machine learning works, how AI systems are trained, what data they rely on, what are the ethical implications, what bias looks like and what that means, you know. So that understanding is transferable, so it doesn't become obsolete when a new tool is released. So that's what really underpins it.
Yeah. Once again, thinking about it and going back to mistakes that may be made previously, I think of all the various, what was the in thing at the time, like myself, Marion, you've seen a lot of things become the next big thing. And now we're talking about AI. And I do genuinely think it's different this time. But, you know, we have made the mistake before focusing on the tools and the tech, where there is that much broader piece where we, particularly around, I think, generative AI asks a really specific set of questions around ethical use, about even from an environmental perspective. And should we really, in the first case, should we be using these tools? Obviously, anecdotally, all the students are using it. So we need to get our heads around that and build from there. And that's why I think this program is interesting. And you mentioned already, you referenced that it's not aimed at computer science teachers. It's aimed at every teacher out there. And that's, I suppose, how is it, going back to that reluctant teacher or that worried teacher, how is the program accessible for teachers, for those who are coming at this quite nervous about using AI and thinking they don't know much about AI in itself?
Yeah, I think it's really accessible in that it's open source, like from a practical basis, it is freely available. It does require guidance, I would say, for the teacher who is, like you've described there, maybe a little bit just tentative about it, about AI in general, and is needing support in just navigating through the different aspects of it. Because, like you say, some people are very excited about it, and then some people are overwhelmed. Like, if you start to kind of think quite deeply about where it could go and where it is going as well, it can be quite overwhelming. So the resources are open access. Our team are providing that guidance through workshops with teachers, and there's interesting insights kind of coming out of that as well. I think even the name Experience AI, we find maybe teachers are coming to the workshops and they're thinking and hoping a lot of the time that they're going to be brought up to speed very quickly on how to use some tools or how to spot when students are using some tools. So there has been a little bit of a challenge in kind of bringing people back to first principles around it, but also explaining what the importance of it is. And you touched on something there around that repeating mistakes of the past of focusing on the tool. But there's also kind of repeating the mistakes of the past from the perspective of what our responsibility of adults are in our relationships with young people and our professional working relationships with young people. And if we think of the mistakes that were made with social media, like that genie came out of the bottle and young people were freely sharing data, images, everything else. Everybody was, you know, and it was only kind of after the fact that a real understanding came about around, okay, what's going in here? Where is it going? What's happening with the data? How is it being used? What should I be thinking about this from a personal perspective, but also from an ethical perspective as well? So I think that was a really solid lesson that we should carry with us to AI as well and to our teaching about AI. I agree with you. I think this is transformative. I think it is on a different scale and level to other technologies. However, I think the fundamental first principles that we've learned from the adoption of technology in a teaching and learning context should be carried forward. And that's where with Experience AI, we have a bit of work to do to bring teachers back to that conversation a little bit, to highlight the importance of that before going forward to these are the tools. And back to that point, the tools are going to change, you know, so it's like, teaching how ChatGPT can do something now, it could be Claude, like it is Claude now, it could be something else tomorrow. Like there's tools coming out all the time.
Once again, I think I couldn't agree with you more. If I was to go back and unpick everything you've just said, there's so many things. It's about looking back and learning. And I think the whole social media thing is a very good example. There's an element now I see in the UK, and obviously they're following suit with Australia. There's a certain element of shutting the stable door after the horse is long gone. I'm not so sure myself around that, but it'll be interesting to see how they pan out. And I know there's talk about such bans coming in here. You know, it brings me back to mobile phone bans and various other things. But I digress a wee bit there. But I think it's really interesting that you're talking about the whole data, you know, because there's a big piece here. It's not just AI literacy. That's really important. But it's a broader digital literacy and I suppose data literacy. Because this awareness of your data, you know, this is the gold, the harvesting of data and the using of data. I think young people need to be just more aware of that. But I do understand from a teacher's perspective, you're going in there, but this is Experience AI. I'm going to learn how to use, you know, A, B, C and D. But that's what they want because they feel they're falling behind. I think that's a key thing with a lot of teachers I talk to. The students are a mile ahead of me and I need to play catch up here. But I think, as you've just said, you start with this idea of let's look at the broader picture. Let's look at it from the literacy lens and then go from there. That brings me on to, you know, have you had any feedback, I suppose, from the teachers that you've done these sessions with who are rolling it out, how they found it? And then the bigger for teachers listening to this saying, I really want to get involved with Experience AI. What are the next steps they take?
So I think one of the things that we're hearing that works really well is the ethics and critical thinking dimension of Experience AI. One teacher put it well, actually, that before Experience AI, she felt that she could talk to students about using AI tools, but she didn't have the language or the confidence to have a real conversation about what those tools were actually doing or who they might be working less well for. So the program brought that level of confidence around ethics, critical thinking, and just what we were talking about building on from the previous conversation as well. Another thing like around that is like the teachers in Gaeltacht settings who teach True Irish, the bilingual materials that we've developed have been a bit of a game changer for them because there wasn't anything that they could use. But it also starts to kind of introduce conversations in classrooms about the idea of sovereign AI as well.
Yes.
Like AI is coming at us from a very wide base, let's say that, you know, in a very wide lens. So what does it mean for minority languages, or what does it mean for just people in different countries and different cultures as well that are being, and this kind of touches in on bias, what does AI mean if it's being developed from, and a lot of the data that's going into it is coming from one perspective. So I think that for us as well is very interesting feedback because it raises questions from our fundamental mission from an equity and inclusion perspective that if you look at AI from that sovereign level, and I know they've done interesting work in Japan and also in France around sovereign AI platforms, that if you look at it from an AI for us perspective, like what does that mean? for somebody who is in a Gaeltacht region in Ireland, what is the bias that's coming out of AI that tells them who they are, really, that they haven't had an opportunity to contribute to, that's just coming from different angles? So I think some of those insights that are coming up from the conversations that teachers are having with students as well is very interesting, but also it gives us a wider piece that supports us to see, like, where are the gaps and where do we need to start building the next resources as well.
The feedback, I think, is a key part. And some of those things, particularly the sovereign AI thing, I know there's a podcast, an Australian podcast I listen to, and there's a lot of talk in that space as well around it. And there is a certain element here that they, and it's going back to the big corporates, that these tools are being primarily developed and rolled out. And at the end of the day, they're businesses and they have commercial interests and quite US-centric as well, I think we have to say. And I think it's a very important conversation to have. And as you mentioned, France, I've heard that they're developing their own tools. I wasn't aware of Japan. But I think even to have that conversation, it's once again that literacy piece about we need to be very much aware of where this is coming from. And the bias piece, and you talked about the Gaeltacht region. And I think it's really interesting that those resources have been, you've been supported to develop those out through Irish, and they can use it in the Gael Skulls. I'm going to finish on, well, two things. I suppose, why do you think, and I mean, this is probably a very obvious question, it is critical that young people understand how AI works rather than just how I can use the tools. From the other point, was adding to that, where do you see, and I mean, this is the million-dollar question, I mean, where do you see this going?
Just touching a little bit like the corporate and big tech as well, I think they're developing the technology, and while we need to be aware of where the data is going, they're also doing a lot of really good work around providing the tools and open access as well. And there's a range of corporate support and industry who are also looking at talent pipelines, and they're looking at that with a very inclusive lens because they want AI to be developed with a range of different perspectives and with diversity. Because again, going back to, if we look at it from a wider perspective or a wider lens and lessons from the past, if you want the art you're looking at, if you want the media that you're reading or listening to, if you want that to come from a range of perspectives and not just to be kind of one single lens, it needs to be built by and developed by and created by a diverse range of people. And I know industry and corporate are doing a lot of work to open up their talent pipelines. So I think it's really important that young people understand and have an awareness of AI and digital literacy so that they can walk through those doors as well. I think access is kind of opening the door, but opportunity is kind of supporting somebody to walk through it, really. There's a lot of opportunity there. I know there's been a lot of in the news recently around potential job losses or kind of entry-level roles going for young people. But there is a huge opportunity there as well because it's moving so fast. The skills often that industry are looking at now are those real human skills and the ability to work with AI. So a fearlessness, an awareness of the fundamental and foundations of it, but a fearlessness to be able to work with it. So to have that fearlessness, you have to understand what's in front of you as well. It's going to continue to develop and to grow and to change as well. But it's really important for young people from all communities to have that fundamental understanding, because that's going to open up so many doors over the next few years for them. And industry and corporates are really looking at where their next kind of talent pipeline is coming from. So that's a really exciting opportunity that's out there. And then just from a life skills perspective as well, looking to see how it can improve their communities, how they can use AI to identify a problem. Like really, our work in Kenya is looking kind of focused at the moment with our strategy on the 2030 digital and green transition. So digital and green go hand in hand. So how do we maximize AI to really look at renewable energies, but also sustainable communities as well? So I think there's a huge amount of opportunity and potential there for young people. So starting now with understanding the fundamentals is going to build really strong building blocks for them to do that. So become fearless, but to start that, you need the knowledge. So make sure that you have the knowledge. And then it's kind of seeing where the reference points are, because for those pipeline and those career pathways too. Reference points are huge. So not everybody has somebody in their family or their community or their locality that knows a person who can get them into an internship or into a role, yeah, or knows what happens in tech or in development. So I think look for those opportunities and look for organizations that can connect you there as well. So the second question is around kind of the future of AI in education. I think really the opportunity for cross-curricular learning and competency-based assessment and recognized credentials for a range of different skills is a huge opportunity that AI can bring to learning. And also, learning is life. Learning happens everywhere. And AI is providing us with the opportunity now for that learning to be recognized in a number of different ways.
Yeah, I think you've really given us that, to reuse that word, the wraparound, about where you're coming from around it. And just that broader, I suppose it's a perfect place to leave it, because there are huge opportunities here. Yeah. And yes, there are massive issues as well. And I'm not cheerleading for any of these tools, but I think we do have to look at it. The glasses is half full, and we just need to go with this. And it's going back as well to that thing about it's here and let's get used to it. So Marion, the very last thing I'm going to ask you is experience AI. This is something I would imagine a lot of teachers would be interested in getting involved in right from the get-go come September. How do they get involved? What's their next step?
So they can go onto our website, kinia.ie. We're not too hard to find, and there's a contact form there as well. We have regional workshops going on at the moment. We'll have more of them coming on as well. So you can see where they're happening around the country as well. So just reach out to us, one of our team. We'd be only too happy to work with any educator who's looking for support in the area.
This has been really, as I said, been eye-opening for myself, just all the work that's going on, and fair dues to you all for doing that work and the Kinia mission. Thanks for sharing the story with me, and specifically drilling down into how we can look at developing young people's digital literacy, our AI literacy, data literacy, all these things that are so important through the Experience AI program. Thanks a million, Marianne.
Cheers, Pat.